Here's the editor of Lenswork Publishing, Brooks Jensen.
In today's podcast, I want to talk about an idea that I've been thinking about off and on for several years, actually. And for the purpose of shorthand, I'll call this giving in to the image. And I first became aware of this as a concept because I think I had developed a bad habit. And as I examined the bad habit, I realized what I was doing and that I needed to let go of it. And that bad habit was this. I would look at an image in relationship to what I thought it should be in my mind's eye. Whether I was looking at someone else's image or my own image, the criteria was always, does the image measure up to my expectations? The problem with that is it leads directly to thumbs up, thumbs down. I approve because the image is what I think it should be, or I disapprove because for some reason the image fails to do what I think it ought to do. Either way, that approach to looking at artwork completely eliminates the idea that the artist might have something to say that is not in line with your expectations. And that leads us to the idea of giving in to the image. Or said another way, letting go entirely of our expectations and letting the image inform us rather than us passing judgment on the image. Maybe one of the best ways I can illustrate this is by calling forth good old Pepper Number 30. Now, what is Pepper Number 30 as an image? It's kind of a dumb photograph of a pepper sitting in what I think was a funnel, if I remember the story right. A pretty close-up image with a shiny surface of the pepper and some nice shadows, but it's just a pepper. It's nothing particular. The old joke says that after Edward Weston made the photograph Pepper Number 30, he ate it for lunch. So it wasn't anything mystical, it wasn't cosmic, it wasn't pointing to anything else, it was, as he used to refer to it, a photograph of the thing itself. So how are we supposed to see Pepper Number 30? If we look at it and say, oh, it's a picture of a pepper, I saw those in the newspaper yesterday when Safeway was advertising peppers. But of course, Edward Weston's Pepper Number 30 is supposedly a much more interesting photograph than the one we see in the newspaper advertisement for the grocery store. What's the difference? The difference might be tonalities and all of the photographic characteristics that make Pepper Number 30 so wonderful. But it might also be that we give in to Pepper Number 30. That is to say, we've been told over and over and over again that Pepper Number 30 is this fantastic, wonderful, important image in the history of photography, and therefore we approach it with an open mind. We don't look at it with thumbs up, thumbs down in mind. We look at it with, what am I supposed to see here? What's in this image that isn't obvious to me? What are the layers of meaning and understanding that I can derive from this image? That is to say, our attitude about the image changes the way we interpret the actual artwork itself. Minor White used to say that you really haven't seen an image unless you've looked at it for at least 30 minutes. Well, his clock was a different clock, and his pace of life might have been a different pace of life than we live in today, but I think the concept of his way of thinking is still valid. And maybe I can clarify this by putting it another way. You haven't really seen an image unless you've given in to the image, with the assumption that there's something significant there. And when we do that, when we approach an image with the idea that we are not going to judge it, we are going to be receptive to it, we are going to assume that it's a significant image, we are going to approach it as though it has something to teach us or offer to us, a sensual experience, a philosophical experience, a visual experience, if we approach it that way, there is a subtle shift in consciousness in the way we look at an image. Consider our Lightroom catalogs. We all have gazillions of images in our Lightroom catalog, of which we have selected a few dozen, that we consider the winners. These are the ones that we're most proud of. These are the ones that we print and mat and frame and hang above the fireplace or publish or share with our friends. What if we shifted that train of thought so that not just those few images are important and significant, but what if we give in to each and every image and assume that each and every image is a masterpiece? A very interesting little bit of psychology comes up that's fascinating to observe. I can pick an image at random in my Lightroom catalog, and if I can have a shift of consciousness that assumes that it's a masterpiece and that I give in to what the image has to offer to me, I can change the way I think about almost any image. Now, is that tomfoolery? Am I just convincing myself that it's a significant image when really it's not? Well, isn't that sort of what we've done with Pepper Number 30? Or so many other images that have come down to us in the history of photography that we deem are so significant because there's maybe a story attached to them, like Migrant Mother. Or maybe there's a biography attached to it, like the work of Josef Sudik. How is it that some images get promoted, get almost pedestalized as being very significant? And why are others not? Is that, in other words, an arbitrary choice of how the images are interpreted, who interprets the image? Whether or not we go to the image with the idea of judging it like we might with a new, young, budding photographer, or if we go to an image that's done by a master, which unfortunately brings to mind all of the really bad Ansel Adams photographs I've seen in the years, published particularly in some of the later books, when they started digging deeper and deeper and deeper into the Ansel Adams archive because they were probably trying to explore some of his lesser-known images. Well, some of those lesser-known images are lesser-known because they're not very interesting photographs. But that doesn't mean they can't put them in a book and sell them and use them in a calendar, because they're quote-unquote Ansel Adams photographs. And since he's the end-all and be-all of West Coast landscape photography, wowee, even though it's sort of not a very interesting image, we're going to pedestalize it and make it something that's significant. That requires a shift in our consciousness of how we think about an image based on its background, based on the story, based on the biography, etc. Well, if we can do that with an Ansel Adams image to make maybe a not very good image seem more important than it is, can't we do the exact reverse with some of our own images and assume they are masterpieces even though we didn't recognize that when we first saw them? Sometimes we have to look at them in such a way, a purposeful way, that allows our conscious mind to give in to the photograph and let our attention become fully engaged by the image before we can see it as being something significant. For some reason, this train of thought brings to mind Where's Waldo? I'm sure if you have kids or grandkids, you're aware of the Where's Waldo books. These are just images. They're drawn images, but they're just images that we intently look at for 20 or 30 minutes at a time until we find Waldo. What I'm suggesting is there's something akin in that to looking at our own artwork images for 10 or 20 minutes until we find something that is significant in it. something that moves us, until we give in to the photograph so that it can impress us with what it has. A similar parallel might be with those magic eyes books. Have you seen these things where when you look at them and you kind of slightly cross your eyes a little bit, suddenly they become very three-dimensional. And they're not three-dimensional until you do that little cross your eyes thing. I remember when I first saw these, it took me the longest time to see an image three-dimensionally, but once I figured out how to do this little weird trick with my eyeballs, I could do it with all the images in the book, and it was quite fun. I know other people who have never been able to do that trick. But it's a matter of giving in to a certain way of seeing something so that your conscious mind sees it in a new and different way. Well, there's a similar thing to looking at fine art photographs. When you show Pepper Number 30 to someone who's not a photographer and has never heard of Edward Weston and doesn't know what it is, it doesn't look like a very significant or even interesting photograph. But somehow, with a little bit of background, with maybe a little education, with maybe a little biography, even someone who's not a photographer can appreciate Pepper Number 30 as being something really special in the world of photography. And there's one other aspect of this that fascinates me, and that is this idea of what we choose to photograph when we're out in the world, or even if we're in our studio making things, tableaus, with the intention of photographing it, and we pass by so many things that are not worth photographing, and so we don't. But then all of a sudden we see a particular tree, or a particular rock, or a particular still life that we've composed in the basement that strikes a chord with us, and we photograph it. Why that one? What was there in that scene or that composition that struck a chord that said, this is important, click the shutter here? Now, sometimes when we do that, and then we look at the image later, we're disappointed and we say, I don't know what I was thinking there. This is no big deal. But I would propose to trust your subconscious mind that led you to make the image rather than your now conscious mind, which is discarding it. And I think it's the same idea of giving in to the image. Because you chose to click the shutter, assuming that there are no mechanical flaws or technical flaws or errors of judgment in terms of how to set the camera, those kinds of things. Assuming the image turns out the way you saw it in your mind's eye before you clicked the shutter, then the question is, can you put yourself in a consciousness that assumes that that image is a masterpiece so that you can give in to it and let it fully engage your conscious attention and thinking so that you can see what is significant there? Sometimes when we look at a picture, we do that instantaneously. Sometimes it takes quite a while for that to happen. And I guess what I'm hoping to avoid doing, at least in my own work, if not you and your work, is that when your first reaction to an image is, nah, nothing here, don't want to take the time to process this, I don't know what I was thinking when I clicked the shutter, set that aside, that initial judgment, and instead try to go a little more deeply. Give in to the image and let it consume you, and maybe you'll see something that you can do either in processing or cropping or contextually or title or text or combining it in a sequence with other images. Maybe there's a way you can bring out its special properties by assuming that it's a masterpiece, even though your first judgment might have been that it's not. Don't we all have a photographer who we bumped into at some point in our life and we looked at their work and said, nah, nothing here, not my cup of tea, not interested in this photographer, you know, move on. And then later said, wait a minute, wow, look at that. That's fantastic. Why didn't I see that the first time around? That was my relationship with the work of Josef Kadelka. at first I thought, well, he's a competent Magnum-type photographer. But then the more I looked at his work, the more I gave into it, the more I realized, wait a minute, this guy's fantastic. These images are genius. And I had essentially the same kind of reaction with Gary Winogrand, the same kind of reaction with Josef Sudek. More recently, the same kind of reaction to the work of Bill Brandt. These are all photographers, when I first saw them, I thought they were no big deal. But the more I looked at them and the more I gave in to their point of view and their photographic vision, the more I realized how wrong I was in judging them so harshly earlier, because their images didn't look like I expected an image was supposed to look. How we think an image is supposed to look is an imposition of our will and our desire and our preferences on the world. But that's not the kind of relationship that leads anywhere with artwork. If all we do is thumbs up or thumbs down artwork, we're going to miss so much that art has to offer us. The assumption that is much more helpful is to assume that the artist knew what they were doing and put something in the photograph that connected with them, and that if we can shift our consciousness, that is to say, give in to the image so that we can understand the art maker's perspective, maybe we'll be rewarded by being able to look at the artwork in a different way. Rather than a judgmental way, we can look at it with a receptive point of view. That doesn't mean you're going to enjoy every piece of artwork. That doesn't mean that every piece of artwork is going to become, you know, something you think is marvelous and wonderful. There's still going to be preferences that guide what we like and what we don't like. But in particular, when we're working on our own work, it can be very deadly to think, well, this image, I'm not going to do anything with it because it doesn't measure up to my assumption of what it should be in an ideal world. Instead, if we give in to the image, sometimes it'll coax us along certain lines in terms of processing or cropping or placement or use in a project or seen in the context of a sequence. In essence, what I'm suggesting is the core of viewing an artwork is not a list of check boxes. Yes, it succeeds here, succeeds there, doesn't succeed here, therefore I'm going to judge it as a 5-star, 4-star, 3. No. That maybe the better approach with artwork is to assume that all artwork has something to offer. If we can bring ourselves to the state of mind where we can give in to the image and let it influence us rather than us trying to judge it as successful or not. Like I say, I've been playing around with this idea for quite some time now, and it's absolutely fascinating how it's changed how I look at so many of my own images. When I give in to an image and let it fully fill my consciousness so that I'm really looking at it deeply, sometimes they fail, but in doing so, maybe they educate me about how they fail, which is ultimately useful. Lots of times, however, what I find is an image I was willing to discount from the get-go because it didn't instantly measure up to my ideal. The more I look at it, the more I realize there's something here. And as an exercise, as a methodology, as an approach to our own work, giving in to the image is far more beneficial than the quick thumbs up and thumbs down of an attitude of judgment.
Copyright 2024, Lenswork Publishing.